Brew Strong is brought to you by morebeer.com, where a man can brew like a man.
Brewers, it's time for the beer radio you've been looking for. This is the show that dispels myths, tackles the toughest topics, and makes no apologies for geeking out on beer. Hosted by two guys that drink before they think, Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters.
Time for another. Hi, diddly dee.
You said Disney, so.
Let me try it a different way. Hi, diddly dee.
Oh, now that's good. That's good. Okay. That's much better. See, it's all in the delivery.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's better. It's different.
Well, and I think, you know, if you just keep saying it, eventually people don't think it's so stupid. You see, this is how it worked with Hey Howdy Hey.
You know? You sure about that? You sure it worked with that one?
I think it worked. I think people are just like, well, that's just what he says. So, they kind of ignore it now.
Not Ned Flanders, that's Jamil.
All right, exactly. It started out because, you know, my daughter, you know, years ago, like 4 years ago, she really loved that Disney song with this Hey Howdy Hey. And really loved it, and we would listen to it in the car. And finally, I'm like, you know, I'm gonna open a show with it. Did it once, and I liked it, and I just kind of went from there. You know,
it works. It works for you.
Why? Thank you. Of course, it works for me. Why wouldn't it work? It's a great way to open the show. How did we get off topic?
I have something off topic for you already, too, since we're already off. I had a question come through in the chat.
Yeah, well, 2 minutes and 47 seconds in, we're off topic.
Off topic.
All right.
How do steam engines work?
We haven't started topic yet, really, so I think we're fine.
Yeah, Palmer makes a good point. You can't be off topic if you haven't started a topic.
There you go.
So we're doing all right.
Okay.
Yeah, well, one of our listeners in the chat room was asking me, he's heard you mention that you're working on a book. And every now and then on the show, you say, yeah, I was writing all weekend, you know, things like that. So it's kind of come up, but you've not told anybody what you're working on. So he wanted to know if this is a beer-related book, if you're allowed to tell us what the topics are, or is this all under wraps?
I think it's 5 easy ways to lose weight.
something I know nothing about. So it's all about the Pacheco sneaker. No.
Great.
And I guess it's okay to talk about it. Chris White and I are working on a book on yeast.
Ah, okay. Great.
For Brewers Publications, and it's going to be everything you need to know about yeast. And not really a yeast biology book. It has a little bit of that in there. You know, kind of gives you a good overview and understanding of yeast biology and, you know, how brewers' yeast varies from, you know, wild yeast and things like that. But more the practical, hands-on, you know, here's how you, you know, work with yeast in your brewery, whether it be a professional brewery or a home brewery, you know, the kinds of things that make the best beer or give you the best control over your beer, what you do with your yeast in that respect.
Great.
Yeah. So it's a lot of freaking work.
Yeah.
And hopefully this will see the light of day sometime next year.
But just think of all the glory you'll receive.
The glory.
For all the work.
It'll be glory.
Yeah, find a couple of glory holes, I'll get some glory, I think.
Yeah.
But other than that, I don't think I'll be experiencing a whole lot of glory. But it'll be a good book. You know, yeast is something I'm really keen about. And, you know, I think that's really where your beer is made. And So I want to transmit as much.
I think that's a really good fit for you, Jamil. I mean, you do. You know, you've had all the, you know, experience in cell counting and investigating and answering your own questions about yeast. You've done a lot of the work, so you'll be able to bring that with Chris to the book. I think it'll be good.
I think that's a good fit for you, and I think that bikini you're wearing today is also a great fit for you.
Right. Well, I skipped the nutters today.
Yeah, went straight for the bikini. Went
straight for the bikini, the mankini.
Good. All right.
I think it accentuates my breasts.
Perfect.
Are we still off topic?
I think we're ready to get on topic. Ready to do that.
What's our topic for today?
All right, we had a caller. It's a great topic. I like this one, and I think there's a lot of variables that people really need to know about. So let me play you the listener question, what you guys are covering today.
Hey, Jamil and John. This is Jonathan from Hickory, North Carolina. I love what you guys have going on with the Bruce Strong Show, and I love the great information you provide. I was hoping you could maybe shed some light on the different types of fermentation vessels, such as carboys, buckets, better bottles, and conicals, and maybe the advantages and disadvantages of each. Also, what about secondaries and tertiaries? Thanks, guys, and keep brewing strong.
Fermentation vessels, guys.
Well, and one thing I have for people is, you know, when you call in, don't write down your question.
Just so that it sounds like a, yeah.
Because then it sounds like you're reading.
Just ask it like you'd ask the guys if you were in person.
Exactly.
It sounds better.
But I really appreciate it. Jonathan, that's a great question. And, you know, with us here today is my good buddy, Jason Petros.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
JP!
Hi.
You know, Jason, you've uh-huh. got a lot of experience with different kinds of fermenters.
Yeah,
you've you know, having worked at Moore Beer for so many years, from the earliest invention of the homebrew conicals, plastic buckets, better bottles. You know, there's a lot of different things you can ferment in, right? You got your Australian fermenting in a plastic cube. You've got fermenting in the kettle. I got a friend of mine down in San Diego who does that. You can ferment in corny kegs. You can ferment in bigger kegs. You got the better bottle, which is kind of a plastic version of the
glass carboy.
You got the glass carboy. You got the stainless steel conicals. You got plastic conicals. You've got the inverted carboy, right? The fermentap piece, and you've got plastic buckets.
Right.
Did I leave anything out? Is there any other ones that you've ever heard of?
No, not really. I mean, you can ferment in anything, right? But I guess that's the point of the show, to figure out what's best.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and I always thought, you know, you could ferment in a plastic bag. John, do you have any reason why somebody wouldn't want to ferment in a food-grade, heavy-duty plastic bag? Just, you know, put a rubber band around the top, and that'll allow the gas to escape
venting. It's the only thing you need to provide for. As we go into our discussion of you know, containers and materials, one topic we're going to touch on is oxygen. Mm-hmm. And you know, permutation of the material. So that's the only issue I'd raise with fermenting in a plastic bag or a plastic liner inside a barrel or something. Mm-hmm. Is you know, you want to give a consideration to how much oxygen you're going to be providing to that fermentation and mm-hmm. for how long.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, we always like to start off the show with some asshattery, and then we like get into the topic, and then we like to start off the show with you know, a definition of what we're talking about. Let's start from the very beginning, and it may sound simple, but you know, John, what is a fermenter? What are we talking about when we're talking about a fermenter?
Okay, well, it's a sanitary container for the fermentation.
Mm-hmm.
You want to isolate the fermentation from, you know, outside contamination.
Uh-huh.
Yep, from the environment. You want to provide a stable environment.
Mm-hmm.
Very often, you know, as we've discussed on previous shows on temperature control, you can provide a stable environment from the room that you're fermenting in, or you can provide it by, the fermenter itself, like an insulated, actively cooled conical is a great way to go, because you're providing a consistent environment for fermentation.
Mm-hmm.
The fermentation, you know, has a couple of different flavor phases. You go through a period of rapid yeast growth right after pitching, where you're generating a lot of fermentation byproducts such as acetaldehyde and diacetyl precursors, then the that growth phase slows down and you get into kind of a stable growth phase or where the attenuation is occurring, and then you start a third phase, which is kind of winding down, what we call a conditioning phase, where the yeast have fermented the majority of fermentable sugars. They're turning their attention to the trisaccharides to finish fermenting those. They're also reabsorbing acetaldehyde and converting it to alcohol. They're absorbing diacetyl. They're kind of finishing the flavor of the beer. So in looking at a fermenter, we want to, again, find a container that will help us isolate these processes from the environment and provide a consistent environment so we'll have a consistent fermentation.
Mm-hmm. All right. Why don't we do this? We'll take a short break, and when we come back, let's have JP tell us about what the ideal fermenter should be capable of doing. Back after this.
Brew right. Brew smart.
Brew strong.
This is Brew.
Hey, Push, the new brewery's looking good.
Thanks, Finn. Piece by piece.
Well, let's fire her up. Whoa! Is that a new kettle?
Yeah, just got it brand new, but paid half price.
What? And that blade scale?
40% off.
The new tap handle?
$5 instead of 13. Got a new regulator for the brew stand, too, but $5 instead of 25.
Dude, where are you stealing all this stuff from?
Where else? The More Beer deal of the day.
Announcing the Beer, Beer, and More Beer deal of the day. Every day, a new fantastic deal from big items to small that will blow you away. Boil kettles, carboy carriers, sterile siphon starters, digital timers. Watch morebeer.com every day for a new deal, and you just might find the item you've been waiting for at a price you cannot believe. Hurry, because stock is limited on most items.
And that sweet Guinness cap, let me guess.
The More Beer deal of the day.
Yeah, I knew it. Come on, let's brew something. Find the More Beer deal of the day at morebeer.com. Celebrity voices impersonated.
Downtown Joe's, located in the historic Oberon Building in beautiful downtown Napa, California, offers an award-winning brew pub experience from 8:30 a.m. to 1 a.m. every day. For 15 years at the corner of 2nd and Main, Downtown Joe's has been voted Best Night Spot 7 times and Best Brew Pub for the last 4 years in a row. Brewmaster Colin Kaminsky's handcrafted ales, like his Tail Wagon Amber Ale and Catherine the Great Imperial Stout, are the perfect accent to riverside dining, live music, and a relaxing outdoor patio. Don't miss the Beer of the Month, special rotating taps, and happy hour all day Mondays. Visit downtownjoes.com to make reservations, peruse their extensive calendar of events, or just read more about their fantastic beers. Come enjoy the fine beer, food, and music. Downtown Joe's, the award-winning brew pub where you'll feel at home.
Organic ingredients. Fresh, clean, good for you, good for the planet. And Seven Bridges has the best selection in the world. Everything is a click away at breworganic.com. Join the mailing list for special deals and regular updates about new products and specials. They have been brewing organic and serving organic brewers for almost 12 years. They can help you brew great organic beer. Take the National Organic Brewing Challenge, the only BJCP-sanctioned nationwide brewing competition just for organic beers. Enter the competition by October 10th for your chance to win great prizes, including a hands-on brewing experience at an organic brewery, brewing equipment, or organic brewing ingredients. Complete details about the competition are online at breworganic.com/competition. Seven Bridges is cooperatively owned in awesome Santa Cruz, California. Everyone there is dedicated to worker and people-friendly business practices and environmentally friendly, worker-friendly brewing products whenever possible. Visit today, breworganic.com.
Ewa, what's your fuel like?
Take awesome and multiply it by two.
Yeah!
Spraying live beer radio all over your face.
Can't get any better than this, baby.
It's the Brewing Network.
Back to the two guys that know how to turn beer
into beer.
This is Brew Strong.
Okay, we're talking fermenters. So, you know, we kind of covered what is a fermenter and what happens in the fermenter and all that. But one question I had for JP, he's used, I think, a wider array of fermenters than either John or I both have used probably together.
True.
So, JP, let's go through it this way. I want to... And some of these you may not have ever used, but I want to kind of get your opinion on some of these various fermenters. For example, let's start with one that everybody pretty much starts off with is the plastic bucket.
I kind of like the plastic bucket. Mm-hmm. I got a friend who that's all he ferments in is plastic buckets, and he'll do 5-6 batches through mm-hmm. that bucket, mm-hmm. and then he'll get a new one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think if you're going to use plastic buckets, that's the way to do it because, you know, everyone is afraid of plastic. Oh, what if I scratch it? Blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah.
The drawback being the scratches, you get some bacteria in there.
Yeah, but it has a handle, mm-hmm. so you can pick it up and kind of move it around. It has a spigot, so you don't have to siphon.
You drop it, it doesn't break.
Exactly right, exactly right. So,
and they're cheap.
They're super cheap.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of like them. They're stackable if you want to store them. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I kind of dig them.
Yeah. Yeah, I used buckets for quite a while, and you do pick up some more oxygen through them, but still, you know, when you're fermenting, actively fermenting, who cares? All right, probably the second most popular would be, what, the carboy?
Yeah, I think the carboy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like those two. The downside being when you're cleaning them, especially with PBW, it's kind of slick anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to pick it up and mm-hmm. move it around and mm-hmm. dump out the water.
Right.
And they're prone to dropping and breaking. And when they break, especially when they have liquid in them, they go, you know, the shards go out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a big grenade. Colin Kaminsky at Downtown Joe's, when he used to work at More Beer, he was brewing there and was lifting a full carboy up to the sink to dump it out, and mm-hmm. it dropped. And instinctively, he went to catch it, but 20 stitches across his palm,
because
it just just shot out like a grenade.
Mm-hmm.
And they're dangerous, but they won't scratch.
I think you really need the carboy handles, the handles you can attach to the neck.
Yeah.
Even then.
Or a carboy bag.
Yeah, bag. I started using the bags, and I like those bags because they really... as a matter of fact, Nick Burton, you owe me my carboy bag and my carboy bag.
Called out.
Dude, it's been like a year. Give me my freaking carboy and carboy bag back. The one of the things I like about it is it's not oxygen permeable. It's got a small opening at the top, so less mm-hmm. chance of dust dropping in it when you have it open. And I can flame the top of it. You can't flame it like you would flame a inoculation loop where you get a cherry red. But you can, run a flame around that and fry anything. You can hear the little pieces of dust and stuff pop and sizzle when you get them. So I kind of like that. I've broken two carboys. No danger because they were both empty at the time. I don't know. You know, it was always some metal thing fell against it and broke them. I had only broken one, but just recently I broke another while I was moving around the garage. Well, and kind of related to that is the better bottle, those plastic mm-hmm. Carboys. Now, what do you think of those?
I haven't used them yet, but we have been at More Beer. We've been replacing the glass carboys mm-hmm. with the better bottle carboys in our beginner equipment kits, mainly because there kind of are no more glass carboys. They were made in Mexico. That factory's closing down. So the supply of glass carboys is now steadily declining. But they're big in the wine industry, home winemaking, mainly because you can lift them. They're not that heavy. I mean, you know, a glass carboy by itself is 15 pounds-ish or something like that. If you're an older guy like myself.
Like me?
Yeah. Or you have a bad back.
Looking at me.
Or something.
Like me?
Yeah, like exactly like you.
If I'm
your name is Jamil.
Fat load laying in a chair across sitting across the studio.
Yeah.
You need a better bottle.
Yeah. You can move them around a lot more. You can bump into them. The two carboys I've ever broken is because I bumped one into the other.
Right.
They're not going to shatter that way. It is glass. Or, excuse me, it is plastic, so it can scratch, especially when you get the carboy brush in, you know, down in the bung hole, and then you have that wire handle of the brush, and, you know, you're kind of moving it around, it's chewing up the bung hole. So you clean it with PBW, you let it soak and kind of swirl it around, so it's not as active as a cleaning, I think, than a carboy, but won't break.
Well, and... God, I can't. I can never remember anybody's name. I think it was Dave in Australia, distributor of better bottles.
Dave sounds fine.
I met up with him at the Australian Homebrewers Conference, and he's like, "Hey, you know, have you tried the better bottle?" I'm like, "You know, I hadn't at that time." So I was like, "Eh, you know, it's a plastic bottle. I don't know. I've got cardboys." He's like, "Look, you know, if I send you some, will you try them?" I'm like, well, sure, you know, but you need to send me like 10 of them because, you know, those are me one. One doesn't do me any good. I need to be able to contrast and compare. I need to be able to do side by sides. I need to be able to do all this. I need a lot of them. So he sent me 8 because 8 fits in a, he says, would 8 be okay? Like, yeah, because it all fit in like these giant boxes. So he sent me 8 of these, and that's what I've been brewing in ever since. You know, I went ahead and I was like, okay, if I'm going to try them, I'm seriously going to try them. I'm going to brew in nothing but the better bottles for at least a year and see what kind of results I'm getting. Are these results different than the results I was getting with the carboys?
And that's easy for you to do, right? Because you put your beer down for that long.
Yeah. Okay. I try, you know, all sorts of different things. You know, I was moving those things around, and I had a whole bunch of carboys. We were moving from one house to another, and I had a whole bunch of carboys stored at the other house. And I went to move them this one day after working with the better bottles, and I was shocked at how heavy a carboy is. I was like, oh, wait a minute. How come this thing's so heavy? I thought, you know, the first one I picked up, I thought, you know, is there something in it? And I'm like, oh, no, I just forgot how heavy these darn things are. So, you know, my only fear is, okay, I can't flame the top of it, for transfers. I can still wipe it with alcohol and all that. I'm worried about scratching the inside, but like you're saying, you clean it with PBW and, they suggest putting a washcloth in. They don't dry out as easily. If you turn them upside down, the water will stay in them forever.
Really?
It's like 4 days later, it's still got water drops on the inside.
Huh.
I'm like, you know, I live in Sacramento, which is pretty dry.
Yeah.
It's like single-digit humidity. And it's still got water in it. So I talked to them. They said, oh, yeah, turn it on its side or turn it, you know, straight up. And sure enough, you turn on its side and the water evaporates. But if you have it upside down, it was like 4 days. I'm like, oh, come on. You know, it's got to, you know, evaporate easier than that.
Yeah.
But other than that, you know, I like it. So I'm still investigating. And, you know, that's what I've been using for all the Can You Brew It beers, except for, I think, the very first one. I've been using nothing but the better bottle. So it's interesting. Interesting.
That's a good you know, story for anybody who wants you to endorse a product. Give it at least a year.
Right,
don't expect Jamil to try it once and love it and then put his face everywhere.
Yeah, I'm not going to...
Takes a good year.
I'm not going to lie to the listeners. You know, it's got to be 100% honest or I'm not going to back something. So,
yeah.
You know, we strive for the truth here at the Brewing Network, and that's an important part of it. All right, so that's Better Bottle. Now, another one that's real popular is the... or at least, you know, a lot of people talk about it, is the conicals, right? So there's stainless conicals, there's even plastic conicals, and then there's the inverted carboy trick of the Fermentap.
The Fermentap,
right?
Yeah. Let's start with the Fermentap. It's a product that's close to my heart. I've used it a few times. I actually really liked it. A lot of people kind of cut it down because they go, well, it's not a true conical because the neck of a carboy isn't 60 degrees. It's not supposed to be a conical. I think, in my opinion, it was kind of sold wrong. It's better for yeast harvesting, I think. So if you're, like we were talking about earlier, if you're harvesting yeast, washing yeast, rinsing yeast, doing anything with your yeast, Fermentap is great.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can pull off yeast like a conical.
Mm-hmm.
Is really what that point of that product is.
And it's inexpensive.
It's $29 or something like mm-hmm. that. The danger is if you really have to pay attention to it. Mm-hmm. I've had a lot of people not be happy with it because they put it on, they throw it in the closet, and they don't come back to it for 2 weeks, mm-hmm. just like a normal carboy would. Mm-hmm. You can't do that because the opening is like 3/8. Mm-hmm. So if you're not pulling everything, you're getting that plug of yeast that's really creamy and sticky,
mm-hmm.
Combined with the trub and all that, and it just blocks it up.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to undo everything, flip it over, mm-hmm. all that kind of nonsense. So mm-hmm. if you use a Fermentap, if you want to do that, you really have to be attentive. Mm-hmm. Every 2 to 3 days, you got to be out there dropping yeast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you're also flipping a really heavy, full
carboy.
Glass carboy.
Right.
Kind of dangerous, but works real well.
Okay. Well, maybe you should come up with a Fermentap for the better bottle.
Probably could.
Yeah.
Probably right. could.
Now, what about the stainless conical and the plastic conical?
The plastic conical, I know there's a couple. There's a mini brew, I think, and then there's the V-vessel.
Mm-hmm.
I've used the V-vessel. I thought it was great.
Mm-hmm.
The only hard part is you have to mount it on a wall. And kind of wrangling that when you have 5 gallons of beer and under 5.5 gallons of beer, lifting it up. What I did is just rest it inside a bucket without the collection ball at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of kept it upright.
Mm-hmm.
Then I could fill it and then just kind of lift it, 3 feet up into its little bracket on the wall. Mm-hmm. Worked fine. I think it's a great V-vessel or a great fermenter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why more people don't use it. I think just because it's plastic.
That and maybe much of the listenership is, fat, weak, old dudes like me. can't lift it up onto the
exactly on, like you
onto the bracket.
And stainless, I really like the stainless conical. It's easy to clean. It's not going to scratch like a plastic conical would.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. You can drop the trub out. It's easy right. to deal with. And
you got a valve on the bottom. You open that
yeah.
up, and any as things settle out in the beer or in the wort before you add the yeast, you can drop that material at the bottom, and you no need to open up the vessel. And the top is removable, so
exactly.
easy to clean inside. You can get all the way inside.
Very easy to clean. Drawing samples
mm-hmm.
also. Pretty much all the stainless conicals have a side port.
Mm-hmm.
arm that you can take a gravity right. reading on, or more importantly, rack off of it. That the kind of downside with a V vessel or mini brew, whatever the other one mm-hmm. is you can't do that. So you're pulling your beer off the bottom, and while you dump everything off, the middle plug of yeast and trub and whatever, you're still going to have stuff stuck to the sides no matter what.
Right.
Yeast is just sticky.
Right.
So as that liquid level hits the level inside where the yeast is in the cone, it's going to pull it with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, most of your beer will be clear, and then once you get to the end, it's going to be cloudy again because you're pulling that yeast off. With
mm-hmm.
with a side valve, you don't have to worry about that.
Mm-hmm. I used conicals, stainless conicals. I had a big collection of them. I won them at the conference. I got some for More Beer.
Yeah, they're doorstops.
Our great sponsor for this show, More Beer, www.morebeer.com. That's where I got my stainless steel conicals. But I've gone, and what I really liked about it was when I would make like a lager, I would use these specifically for lagers. I would put my wort in it, and I would chill it down, the rest from ale temperatures down to lager temperature in the fridge. And once all the break material had settled down, I would drop that break material, and then I would pitch my yeast after that. And worked really well for me. The thing I didn't like about it was all the valves and the ports on these things. Because each one, I would have to disassemble this thing. I'd have to boil those valves every time I used it. And even if you're going to clean and sanitize it, I can't accept that level of risk of bacteria and other problems.
Yeah.
So for me, that was it was a lot more work too.
See, I like how you're willing to monkey around with your yeast and to pull it out and to wash it and to transfer it, but you're not going to boil a ball valve. I love that.
It's too much work for me.
Yeah.
Well, because, and I did until I found an alternative, which was I use the Whirlpool chiller, and I can pump ice water through there, and I can chill down my wort in the kettle to lager temperatures. And then I let all the break material settle there in the kettle, and then I rack off clear wort into my fermentation vessel, which is now in better bottles currently. So I'm getting clear wort in there, so I can pitch my yeast immediately. So I don't even have to wait the amount of time for it to settle out that I was and to chill down the rest of the way to lager temps. So by doing that, I've gone back to the kind of the carboy or better bottle route. All right, and then there's a big expense with the conicals, but a decent product and very very interesting. Now, a lot of people like to ferment in corny kegs. Now, what about that?
I have an opinion on that. I've never done it before, so I don't feel all that comfortable talking. Well, yeah, who am I looking to? I love it. I don't like it. I don't like it. I think it's too tall and too skinny.
You can't see anything.
You can't see anything, but conicals,
it's really hard to get it as clean.
For me, it's just not enough volume.
Yeah,
not enough volume.
You end up with you're going to end up definitely with less than 5 gallons of beer.
But conicals are the ratios they are for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
We decoction mash. Some people do because that's how they used to do it 300 years ago. Well, over the course of brewing history, they've designed conicals to look a certain way and to act a certain way for a reason. The yeast need that kind of shape,
that 60-degree
slope to go around. Yeah, and you put it in a thing that is not. I mean, it's way taller than it is wide, and I don't think the yeast can really get around. I think it stresses them out, and I think you get a lot more ester production, discernible or not. To certain people,
I would agree with you that you end up with a different beer in all these different fermenters. I think you end up with a different beer in some of them, and a good example like what JP is talking about is if you get a plastic top for one of your conical fermenters and you look at that and you can see the kind of the convection currents that are set up during fermentation that. They fully circulate the beer throughout the conical, and you're getting good coverage. It's almost like stirring a yeast starter, and having those yeast moving around and distributing throughout the beer, and getting that movement results in better attenuation, different ester profile, things like that. Same thing,
Even
corny
in a carboy,
keg,
yeah.
I think you may run into more of a problem with that. I think that could actually be an issue. And people who would poo-poo this, you look at something like a Yorkshire square, those slate squares with the they have corners in them, right? And one of the things they determined about the corners in those square fermenters is that they're kind of like a dead zone. There wasn't good circulation going on. And actually, this is where a lot of the diacetyl that's produced, and one of the reasons that it produces all this diacetyl is because of the corners of those fermenters.
Not getting good yeast action there.
Right. And it's one of the fundamental reasons that for those beers. So I think there's a definite difference there, right?
Yeah, and I think if you, because I can hear the argument now, well, apparently it's English brewers do it, and they produce great beer, so I should be able to do it. Well, mm-hmm. they've learned how to do that. They've mm-hmm. learned how to brew around that kind of stuff.
Well, it depends what you're trying to brew, too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. You can't, they're not equal, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
So some of these fermenters might be better for certain types of beer, certain styles of beer.
Well, like Belgian beers, mm-hmm. you know, they say a one-to-one ratio in the fermenter. Mm-hmm. You know, so
height to
squat
width.
as it is wide. Yeah, mm-hmm. that's going to stress the yeast out, and you get a lot more ester production, a lot more of that spicy note, and it works. Mm-hmm. Talking to Vinny when he first started doing Belgians, he had one fermenter that he just used for the Belgians, mm-hmm. and then he goes, "I just learned how to do that, how to get the same flavors in a conical conicals, mm-hmm. so I don't use this anymore."
Right.
But he's learned how to work his yeast to figure out how to do that and to get the flavors that he wants. But when you can't, you just go with the fermenter shape.
Especially the taller the fermenter, the more hydrostatic pressure is on, mm-hmm. and it actually suppresses ester production and does a whole lot of different things to the yeast. You know, the more partial pressure of CO2, that impacts you know, yeast as well, and yeast activity. So.
I think it stresses it out. Yeah.
So
that's my opinion on it. I've never okay. done it.
Now, what about open fermenters in general? We're talking about Yorkshire squares. What about fermenting with an open top, with
pot with a lid on it?
Yeah, or a bucket with like
a cheesecloth or something like that. Again, something I've never done. There's a thread I think on the More Beer Forum, or maybe even the BN Forum, about open fermentation. When I do ferment in carboys, I get this, they have a breathable bung. It's a silicone thing where it has a little flap mm-hmm. that you can pull up. Mm-hmm. You can actually remove the whole thing, but I pull that up a little bit. So if there, when there's off gassing, it doesn't have to build up pressure to pop that little flap. Mm-hmm. Cause that's really the point is to not have a lot of headspace on the yeast to not mm-hmm. stress them out. Talking to Chris White a couple times, he goes, you know, 2 to 3 PSI is enough to stress the yeast out.
Right. So head pressure on the yeast, you want the minimal right. head pressure. So you could put just a piece of foil loosely over the top of your carboy.
You can definitely do that. It'll change. I think it'll change your outcome. Mm-hmm. You may not like it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's a lot of brewers that, I mean, Anchor Steam. Mm-hmm. Prime example, you
right.
know.
They have those big open fermenters in that room there.
Yeah.
Now what about... in a kettle. I've got a friend in San Diego. He brewed a gold medal winner for the second round of the Nationals in like light American lager. And the way he does it is he boils, you know, he does his mash, boils in the kettle, chills in the kettle, and then pitches his yeast in the kettle, lets it ferment in the kettle, and then he runs it out into a keg when he's done.
I would have no idea, man. Everything in my mind says that is wrong. Uh-huh. That will never work.
But it does.
Apparently it does.
So, you know,
apparently
his,
it does.
Part of his theory is, well, you know, less contamination because he's not transferring it, right?
Sure.
You know, every time you transfer your beer or your wort, you're picking up more bacteria, more wild yeast, things like that. So, not transferring it.
Yeah. How does he cover it during fermentation?
Puts a lid on it.
Just the lid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As long as nothing's dropping in, nothing crawls up the sides and crawls into your fermenter. Keep right. that in mind. So in all fermenter designs, you know, if you're looking and evaluating a new type of fermenter, you know, think about how dust settles. And anywhere that dust settles, that's a problem. If dust cannot settle, then you won't get bugs crawling in. I mean, you could get literal bugs like ants or, you know, fruit flies, things like that, or house flies, you know, crawling in. So you want to seal it against that. But, you know, bacteria and wild yeast aren't going to get in there because they have no opportunity to drop in. You know, once a lot of CO2 is being produced, I guess you may draw some mosquitoes, but everything else can't really get inside there. You know, it's filled pretty much 100% with CO2, so nothing will really live.
I'd be worried about, you know, like bitterness pickup of the hop residue in there something. There's got to be.
Light American lager, you know, but you're putting a hop pellet in there anyway, so.
What a great style to prove that is right. At least a viable option.
Yeah, and people would poo-poo him and his whole thing, saying, oh, no, you can't do that. It has all these problems. Yeah. It's flavor problems. And he's like, well, no, like light American lager. And, you know.
Well, there you go.
Right. And you would think that the break material, I'm not a fan of, you know, people ask me, well, why, you know, I hear, oh, you can leave the break material in there. It's good for, you know, the yeast because they can use it for sterile production and all that. Well, it's easier for yeast to use oxygen for sterile production in the first place. Hmm. When they have to go to, you know, the unsaturated fatty acids for their sterile production, then, you know, it takes more energy from them. They really don't need a lot, right? The break material that's in your wort, you can remove all that visible break material. There's still tons of break material in there. It's not until you filter the wort that you actually get rid of all the break material. So there's more than enough there. And if you have an excess, I think that can affect flavor of the beer. The break material can coat the yeast cells, and especially if you're going to get into repitching, like our previous show was talking about, I do a lot of repitching, especially with lagers, so I don't want to have all that break material mixed in with my yeast. I don't want it in there in the first place. It coats the cells, it impacts viability, things like that. So that's one of the reasons I try and get rid of that break material. So I would think you'd have that issue in a kettle if you're not, you could. You know, let that settle and, you know, draw the break material off the bottom and throw your yeast in, I guess. But, you know, it's convenient. It's easy. It's, a vessel you already have. So you don't necessarily need a fermenter. And one last one. All right. Our friends down in Australia, a lot of them will do this plastic cube thing. They will take their boiling wort, run it into this food-grade plastic cube, fill it up near to the top. They'll screw the cap on, and then they'll invert it and let the boiling liquid, you know, sanitize the top so the whole thing gets sanitized. They'll let it chill overnight, and then they'll pitch their yeast.
The first thing I'd be worried about is what temperature that's food grade up to. I mean, even Rubbermaid coolers are 150, mm-hmm. 160. Reinforced vinyl tubing is 180.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Polypropylene.
Is that... That's
Should
good
be.
For boiling. Okay.
Should be.
I don't know. I don't have any experience in it. I've always thought that if I could find a food grade plastic bag, like a 5 gallon or 6 gallon bag, uh-huh. I'd love to line my
fermenter with it. Yeah.
I'd love to line my plastic bucket with it, siphon off of there,
and then just
take out the trash. Yeah. And you don't have to worry about your scratches cleaning up at all.
Yeah, it's
great for the environment.
Fresh every time. Yeah.
Yeah, so, but I don't have any experience on that. I don't know.
Well,
if it works.
You know, I think you need to make some adjustments on your recipe because, you know, you let that wort sit at those high temperatures. You know, anything, what's the temperature of isomerization? It's like, you know, it happens like even, you know,
70?
Down to 100, like 70 C.
Like that.
Yeah. I mean, it, you know, isomerization is still happening. So, you know, you need to adjust your recipe for how slowly it's cooling down. You're going to get more bitterness. A lot of those flavors and aromas may not still be there or may not be in the same condition when it's done. So I think there's some tricks to it. But, you know, it probably could work. And again, you know, you got to worry about DMS.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to boil for long enough so there's like no... you know, conversion to SMM happening to DMS or DMSO.
Well, I think with the long, long history of great beer in Australia, I think that's just proof of itself that'll be a good... I have no idea what I'm talking about.
We tried several beers.
I know.
yet another country that hates JP.
Yeah.
What were you saying, John? Sorry.
Well, I was saying you and I tried several beers when we were down at the Australian conference. They've been brewed in the, you know, beer in a bag system,
mm-hmm.
and you know at their club night.
Well, the brew in the bag with the for all grain.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of
beer
doing
in the cube, you know,
yeah,
no
the beer
chill.
In the cube, yeah. So instead of getting a mash tun and all that, they do, you know, just a like a big paint strainer bag, put all their grain in there, and it's just like a giant steeping thing, you know, and do a all grain that way.
I think Tor did that, didn't he? Or is he a Denmark listener or something like that? I think he did that once recently.
Yeah, they call it beer in a bag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I did many years ago. We had this lady give us a bunch of beer stuff because her husband had, you know, kicked it or whatever. And in it was this bag that you hang up, you pour hot water into it, and it has your extract and your yeast and your hops, and you just let it ferment, and the bag kind of, you know, grows and grows and grows, self-carbonates, and it had a little spout at the bottom. But it was like raisins. It was like drinking raisin water. Worked, though.
Raisin water. Yeah. Sweet.
That's the only beer in a bag I have.
Let's take a short break. Let's talk about more raisin water when we come back.
Keep your carboy cap on. This is Brew Strong.
We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Push from the Brewing Network, and I want to tell you about the Brewmaster's Warehouse and how you can get 10% off your next order. I'm a pretty techie guy, but I've never seen an online store like this. It's awesome. Go to brewmasterswarehouse.com and click on Brew Builder. You can whip up a custom recipe so easily even Sven could do it. Seriously, it's slick. You can share your recipe with your own logo and notes to the Brewmaster's database if you want. And the best part, it keeps a running tally of the beer you're building while you're doing it. Then, bam, click Buy Recipe and your cart is filled and ready to go with helpful suggestions in case you forgot something. This thing is amazing. Brewmaster's Warehouse is run the way a home brewer would do it, with great service, fast turnaround, and $6.99 flat rate shipping. Brewmaster's Warehouse and the Brew Builder blew me away. Check it out today at brewmasterswarehouse.com. I'm serious. And don't forget to put BNARMY in the discount code box for 10% off your order. Check out brewmasterswarehouse.com. Cheers.
Nico, listen, our lawyers said that we had to do this for 1 hour, and after this, we don't have to talk to each other for 3 more months until the next meeting.
Kids. Come on, let's get out of here.
I'm supposed to have more lines. I'm the professional. Hey, it's Sully.
And I'm Nico.
And we opened the 21st Amendment 9 years ago at 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park, to make great beer and have a great time doing it.
That's right, because to us, the 21st Amendment is more than just the right to make beer. It's the right to experiment, to be innovative, and just do things differently. And so now, we're putting our craft beer in cans.
That's right, cans. You can find our world-famous Heller High Watermelon Wheat Beer and Brew Free or Die IPA throughout California and Alaska.
And now it's also available on draft at select accounts in the Bay Area.
So next time you're at your local neighborhood pub or good beer store, be sure to ask for 21st Amendment in cans.
Because everyone likes it in the can.
Tasty Crack Cans.
Tasty Crack Cans.
BN Army members, are you looking for a discount on hops? Keep listening. Nico's Homebrew Supply at NicoBrew.com has hops by the ounce and by the pound. Choose from varieties like Amarillo, Centennial, East Kent Goldings, Holler Tower, Simcoe, Summit, Tomahawk, Warrior, Willamette, and more. And adding new varieties all the time, many for less than $20 a pound. Whether a couple ounces at a time or an 11-pound bag, all hops are shipped vacuum sealed and frozen straight to you. Nico's Homebrew Supply offers store-wide $5 flat rate shipping and won't waste your money on unnecessary overhead or advertising. They're going bare bones and passing the savings on to you. The staff at Nico's Homebrew Supply loves to brew and is committed to keeping homebrewing affordable and accessible to anyone who wants to join in this great hobby. And for a limited time, use coupon code BNARMY at checkout for a Brewing Network discount. Visit NicoBrew.com. That's N-I-K-O Brew.com for your hops and more. NicoBrew.com. Your bare bones buddy in the brewing business.
White Labs, your source for maltose mowing monsters, announces the White Labs Platinum lineup for 2009. Looking for out-of-the-ordinary yeast to make the best beer possible? The Platinum strains from White Labs are only available for a limited time and make your homebrew stand out. Through February, find Australian Ale, Essex Ale, and Dusseldorf Alt Yeast. March and April, it's Nottingham Ale, Abbey 4, and Mexican Lager Yeast. And May through June, don't miss Premium Bitter Ale, Belgium Belgian Wit 2, and Belgian Bastogne Ale Yeast. Keep up with all the great yeasts in the White Labs Platinum Program at whitelabs.com, where you can also join the White Labs Customer Club. Brew with the freshest and most unique yeast with the White Labs 2009 Platinum Strains. White Labs. It's all in the vial.
Williams Brewing is your online resource for prompt delivery of quality home brewing supplies. Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Cut hours off your brewing sessions by using one of their 11 varieties of famous Williams malt extract. Their Williams German Pils is mashed with pure German Moravian two-row barley malt for a light blonde color and malty crispness you just can't get from other extracts. Or check out their unique fermenters, draft beer equipment, bottling aids, and more. They even have their own line of precision hydrometers. Go to williamsbrewing.com to browse their vast selection and enter promo code BREW at the order checkout for $5 off your next order over $50. Orders placed by 3 p.m. ship the same day. Again, go to williamsbrewing.com and enter promo code BREW at checkout for $5 off your next order. Brewing is easy the Williams way.
You're listening to the Brewing Network.
Back to the beer guys that make other beer guys look like wine guys. Brew strong.
All right, so we're talking fermenters, and one question that's come up that Jonathan had was, what about secondary, tertiary, you know... I'm like totally against transferring your beer from one fermenter to another unless you have a really good reason to do it. And just because you were told to do it, or this whole story of yeast autolyzing and you know, all that stuff, I don't believe that that's a good enough reason to be transferring the beer and do the secondary thing. So.
That was always my favorite is, it'll clear faster if it's in a secondary. Do you think the yeast on the top are looking down and go, oh, there's too many people down there,
there's
Joe.
Room. There's more room now.
Yeah, I'm going to hang out here and kind of play this out, see what happens.
Well, and it's
play
and
out fact, this top cropping thing.
It's just the opposite because if you, the yeast stratify. So at the bottom, they're in the highest concentration, right? At the top, they're in the lightest concentration. As it goes down, they're settling down. If you suck all that liquid back, you're redistributing that whole column of things that have been settling back evenly, and they got to start all over again. So it's going to take longer for all the yeast to settle. So, yeah, I don't know what the heck's going on there with that either. But there are times when you're going to want to do something like a secondary. You're doing fruits, you know, fruit beers, you're doing lambics, you're doing dry hopping, things like that. You may need to, do some transfer sour beers a lot of times. You ferment it with the primary yeast. You got the big yeast cake down there. A little bit of the yeast breaking down, providing nutrients for, you know, other critters. That's fine, but not that whole yeast cake. So you need to transfer to another fermenter.
Yeah. If you need a secondary fermentation, then you need a secondary fermenter. But otherwise, you don't need it. As you said, Jamil, if you're doing fruit, if you're doing sour, if you're doing an extended aging where you know you really want to get the beer off that primary yeast cake, that's when you transfer. Otherwise, you just leave it in the primary.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so which one of these fermenters is best for being a primary if you want to transfer to a secondary, or what's best for being a secondary? What makes an ideal secondary fermenter?
Me or JP? Well, I'll
anybody. So we don't have dead air. No, I can answer my own question.
Okay. Now, secondary, you want? I mean, you know, you have less depending on what the use is. If it's aging of a lambic or you know a goose or something like that, where you have minimum activity. Going on in the beer, minimum evolution of CO2, you're going to want that secondary to be rather full to minimize the airspace above the beer. If on the other hand, if you're if you're going to do a secondary fermentation with fruit or something, then you're going to want a lot of headspace with beer to to take that Kroisen again, and the the active fermentation, that active second fermentation will purge that headspace, and so you can use a regular carboy, a bucket, a conical. Your options are pretty open there. I think a conical is nice because it gives you the opportunity to get get that primary beer off the primary yeast cake and trub. You can take it out through the bottom of the conical, and you can do your secondary fermentation without moving the beer anywhere. Mm-hmm. That's the advantage of a conical. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if I'm doing an extended aging of a beer, then I'll go from like a 6.5 gallon carboy to a 5 gallon carboy, and get that 5 gallon carboy topped up pretty high.
That's what I like to do. I like the fact that you can fill it up to the neck where you've got just minimal headspace. And that for me is a nice thing. One of the things I don't like about buckets or any of the plastic vessels, although I guess the better bottle is different in this respect. Many of these the plastic pickle bucket thing, they tend to be oxygen permeable, and the oxygen will pass right through the wall of the plastic and into the beer. So if you're doing any sort of extended aging, I wouldn't do it in plastic for that reason.
Right.
Well, I mean, what John said was really what, extended aging. It's not a secondary fermentation. There's no additional mm-hmm. fermentation happening unless you're doing fruits or mm-hmm. more sugar or something like that. Yeah, yeah. It's extended aging. Mm-hmm. Or maybe not even extended aging. It's just aging. It's finishing out. I mean, so the name secondary fermentation always makes me laugh because it's not mm-hmm. at all right. what is happening.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's just, a secondary fermenter, or secondary step, or secondary vessel. Now, one thing we didn't talk about in fermenters was wood fermenters, like a barrel.
Huh.
What about fermenting in a barrel? If you're looking for, pickup of some sort of, bugs from the woods, mm-hmm. Time after time. I think most of us nowadays, if we're doing anything in wood, we're doing, we'll ferment initially in whatever our fermenter of choice is, and then we'll transfer to a barrel just for aging, flavor right. pickup, flavor development, things like that.
Yeah, and, souring.
Instead of actually fermenting in that vessel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, generally that'd be a souring kind of operation, and you can use the plastic buckets if you're making a sour beer, because that micro oxygenation through the wall will help the Brettanomyces or the bugs that you're using to sour the beer, same as the wood.
Mm-hmm.
Different character, of course.
Well, and you got to be careful though with those plastic buckets. I was long a proponent of it, and I've stopped doing my sours in plastic just because too difficult to control. I would get way too much acetic character.
Okay.
So I've kind of backed off of that. When I thought I had it down. I thought I had it perfect and repeatable in plastic, and I was wrong. And So now I'm doing glass carboys and carboy caps and doing it slower and more controlled, and it's working better for me over time. Now, I want each of us to pick what would be our ideal fermenter. I want us to commit to something here and say, well, my ideal fermenter is, and kind of explain why. And it may have to do with the kind of brewing you're doing, I think. And all right, I'll allow you to pick a different one for different types of beers, if you got a reason for that. All right, John, why don't you start first? For your general ales, what kind of fermenter would you go with?
I guess my ideal fermenter would be a glass carboy with a spigot at the bottom of it, because that I like to be able to watch the fermentation, watch the height of the Kroisen and see the activity.
Like Justin, grab yourself a box of Kleenex and watch some yeast go at it?
Yeah. But when it comes time to, you know, rack the beer to a keg, I've been lucky over time with my auto siphon and you know, not getting contamination at that point when I'm racking to a keg. Mm-hmm. But it should be nice to have a sanitary ball valve to be able to, you know, just drain the beer to the keg. Mm-hmm. So, and that's one reason I like the plastic buckets. Mm-hmm.
The better bottle, you can put a spigot on those things.
Yeah. So, I should try the better bottle in that regard. I also have a stainless steel conical, and that is, you know, very nice for transfer and so on. Mm-hmm. As you were mentioning, when it comes time to thoroughly clean it afterwards, there's a lot more to do with it rather than the convenience of a carboy, just, you know, filling it up with a hose and pouring in some PBW and letting it sit for a few days. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a little more effort involved in maintaining a conical, but mm-hmm. they are a very nice, you know, fermentation and transfer unit. Mm-hmm.
So what would you pick for doing your lagers? Is it still a carboy with a valve?
Yeah. I'm used to those.
Mm-hmm. It depends on what you also have a comfort level with, I suppose. Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't comfortable with like the better bottle thing until I started using them. I kind of forced myself to try them. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, okay. Yeah, there's some differences. There's some things I don't like. There's some things I do like.
Now, how long are you leaving a fermentation in the better bottle?
Generally, you know, a couple of weeks at most. You know, usually an ale is done within, 10 days tops. It's out of there. But they're not supposed to be oxygen permeable.
Okay.
They're supposed to, and there's plastics that, like Saran Wrap or, you know, all those cling films, plastic cling films.
Right.
They actually, their oxygen permeability is really, really low, almost impervious to oxygen transfer. They're using some sort of, plastic polymer in that thing that stops that. It's one of the reasons why you wrap stuff in that to keep the oxygen out so your food stays mm-hmm. fresh.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's possible. And
okay.
You know, and then that material is a little harder, so it doesn't seem to scratch as easy. So
yeah.
I don't know. I'm intrigued. I'm definitely not sorry I started this investigation. So that's mm-hmm. that's a pretty good thing.
The last couple lagers I've done in carboys, I haven't bothered racking to a secondary. I mean, I just mm-hmm. I brew the entire lager mm-hmm. in that 1 6.5 gallon carboy.
That's what I do. Yeah, I know, no messing around. That's one of the problems with the better bottle is it's a little too small. Mm-hmm. You know, the 6.5 gallon carboy is really ideal for fermenting, you know, a 5 gallon batch of beer, because you can have a little extra for waste when you rack to the keg. You can get a full 5 gallons of beer in your keg. And with the better bottle, it's a little smaller. It's like a 6 gallon vessel, I think.
Okay.
So that half gallon makes a difference. Not as bad on lagers, but on high fermenting ales, you get a lot of blow off.
Yeah.
And what about you, Jason? What about your favorite? What's your ideal fermenter? Or is it not invented yet?
Yeah. Like Palmer said, I mean, I'm kind of used to mm-hmm. what I brew with currently, which is a temperature controlled stainless conical.
Mm-hmm.
It has a sample port. I can dump the yeast off the trub off if I want to extend the, you know, aging time that the beer is in the carb or in the conical. I can take the lid off, clean it real easily. I don't have to take up a fridge space to keep the temperature. It's all kind of just self enclosed. So I might sound like a company man, but I think that would probably be it. I would like to experiment more with kind of more of a deeper, wider fermenter for maybe some Belgian stuff,
mm-hmm.
Just to kind of play around with it. But, I mean, for the most part, you know, I kind of dig on it. I kind of dig on the conical. It's there's no threads anywhere, so I don't have to worry about anything like that. It's good to go.
Well, and I know one thing you're not is a company man. You'd chef that company just as soon as you could. So I
are
know,
you are
I
you
know.
Offering me a job right now? Because I know we should talk.
I know you. You wouldn't say it if it wasn't truly what you believed in.
That's true.
And if you would like to ferment in a stainless conical like JP, go to the company that invented them, the homebrew stainless steel conical. It's Morebeer at morebeer.com. They started those a long time ago, and I think they've got some great value to them. One of the things that I found difficult for me is that I'm extremely lazy, and I also wanted to have at least a half dozen of the exact same vessel for comparing fermentations, different yeasts and stuff. So it's hard for me to get a half dozen stainless conicals. They are pricey.
They're not, $40 like a Carboy.
Yeah, if you only need one fermenter, or you get some guy in Australia to send you 8 better bottles.
Yeah. You write a book, go talk in Australia,
right,
and then you get 8 fermenters.
There you are. Yeah. See? Piece of cake. It's really an easy way to go about it, folks. And I think, the side-by-side thing is really important to me. So, that for me was kind of a stickler. And JP, you like this for ales, you like it for lagers. The only thing you're questioning is, gosh, I wish I could experiment with more with height to width ratios for, different kind of profiles from fermentation.
Yeah, it'd be kind of fun. I don't do a whole lot of lagers. I've done maybe a handful in my brewing career. I'm mainly an ale kind of a guy. But I ferment cold, 60, 62-ish, and the temperature control more than handles it, and I think it's fine, and I think experimenting with different kinds of vessels for different beers is kind of a cool thing. That way, just like we were talking during the break, different base malts are going to give you different results in your flavor for your beer. You can't make a German Pilsner with American Turo. Mm-hmm. You can, but is it really a German Pils? Maybe different fermenters for different styles of beer are kind of the next, not the next level, but a different way to approach some beers. I happen to do a kind of a big extract batch with a couple friends, just kind of goofing off. Did a saison, fermented one in a carboy and one in a plastic bucket because I had it, and then hit the numbers. Obviously, both if there was 10.52, both ended at 10.9. Spicy notes were different. The flavor profile was a little bit different. The one in the bucket was a little more spicy, and the tube was different. The ones in the carboy finished a little, cheesy, like an English ale, right? But not as clumpy. The one in the bucket were like inch wide chunks of tofu. It was the weirdest, compare and contrast I've done on accident with yeast. Same yeast, same oxygenation, same everything. Completely different. So I think there is some viability to different fermenters for different different profiles.
Well, yeah, I think so too. I think shape of the fermenter, and in the case of a plastic bucket, the oxygen permeability, a little bit more oxygen throughout the course of fermentation may actually have some impact on, flavor development and, even flocculation, and population and, just a number of things. I think that's one of the interesting things for me is open fermenters or Yorkshire Squares or anything like that, Burton Union Systems, you should have mentioned Firestone Walker because they do, their fermentation that way. There's a lot of different things, and don't think that when you're going out and buying yourself a fermenter or designing your own fermenter, that it's not going to have an impact on the flavor of the beer. It is. And that's the other interesting thing. When people have, multiple fermenters, they have like one of these, one of those, and one of something else. and don't expect the beer to turn out the same in each one. And people go, oh, no, it's the same. Or, you know, be like, well, this is made of stainless, so it tastes, my beer tastes better. It's like, you know, they get that kind of thing in their mind. They paid more for the fermenter, so.
That's a good thing to have, better. Just saying it right there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, hey, you know, and actually, if the beer tastes better to you, then it does taste better. That's all that matters, you know. The hell with anything else.
Right.
However that's determined in your mind or on your palate, there's nothing wrong with that. But I'm just telling you, if you side by side the different fermenters and ferment in each of them, they'll turn out differently, and you'll taste the difference. So you know, making that fermenter choice can be fairly important. Now, for me. Gosh, I'm kind of, you know, on the carboy track with John. I wouldn't put a ball valve on it because, again, I'd fret endlessly over sanitizing that thing, and it would drive me nuts trying to, you know, attach it and reattach it. And so I don't go with any valves. I don't like valves. I just use a piece of – I don't even use a racking cane or an auto siphon. I use a piece of tubing. And that's all I use to transfer my beers, a piece of tubing and like a turkey baster, and that's it. So I like, you know, the fewer openings, the better. I'm a single opening man. you know, there's only one way for me.
Well, that's why you're no fun.
Yeah, and then you know, the better bottles would be a great solution for me. I really love their lightweight. I mean, it's bordering on the perfect fermenter for me, except it's scratchable. But again, if I can get a guy in Australia to send me another 8, then, you know, I can scratch him up and throw him away. It's not a problem. Probably have to write another book, go out to Australia again. Yeah, but
it's good to be the king.
You know, the size is a little smaller, so that's a problem for me. And I can't, you know, flame the opening without melting the plastic. But, you know, I can make do with a lot of the problems it has for a lot of the benefits. You know, no breakage. It's much lighter. So, you know, at this point, I'm at a 50-50 carboy better bottle, and I'm starting to lean more towards the better bottle at this point. So we'll see what the rest of the year has to do with my results on that. I'll announce it on a later show, but I'm pretty happy with that, and that's pretty close to ideal because I don't need the ability to drain off the bottom anymore. I don't need the ability to, you know, remove the tube or anything like that because I do the whirlpool chiller. So you know, it's other parts of your process kind of determine what fermenter is going to fit for you. And I really like what JP's saying about you know, height width ratios being important in, you know, flavor profile and, you know, head pressure and things like that. I think there's a lot to that. And again, if you're not getting exactly the beer that you want, you know, it may be, you know, fermenter design. And if you're, you know, a commercial brewer, you know, those are things you got to take into account as well. When you're trying to dial in that perfect beer, those may be, you know, things you need to play with. And you may need to play with temperatures and oxygen and pitching rates and things like that in order to overcome a certain fermenter. I think that's what JP was saying Vinny had to do in order to make his Belgians work out. All right. Questions from the chat.
Yeah, a few clarifications. One question that had come through is how you rack off your better bottles, JC. And you just said that you don't even use a racking cane. You just use a tube.
Stick my tube in there.
Throw your tube
right
in there. So the second part of his question was, how do you sanitize for that? Are you using a brand new tube every time so that you just have to sanitize it?
No.
You will reuse some?
I'll reuse it usually for maybe a brewing season. Because tubing's really cheap,
mm-hmm.
right? Especially I go down to our wonderful sponsor, More Beer,
yeah.
and I say, hey, I need some tubing, and they snap off 8 feet of tubing, hand it to me, and go, here you go.
That's why I'm surprised
out.
You don't use a brand new one every time and just throw it in Star Sand.
Yeah, I have a box.
Yeah, but, you know.
I cut new ones every time.
I don't want to waste, you know, materials. You know, if they're giving it to me, I don't want to waste it.
Got it.
Jay-Z, yeah, so how do you start the siphon with the tubing?
Right, so what I'll do is I'll take my tubing, I put it in Star Sand or IO4, and, you know, let that get well sanitized. And then I run the tip into the – I don't touch the end of it. The part that's going to touch the beer, I don't touch, even though I put my hands in sanitizer as well. And put that inside the carboy, just inside the liquid. And then I'll take the other end. I'll have a sanitized turkey baster, and I'll just draw the liquid up through there. I hold the tubing low until it gets started. Then I hold it up, and I'll run a sample out into a flask that I'm going to use to do my hydrometer samples and taste samples and things like that. And then the tubing goes into the keg, and I run it into the keg from there. And you can do closed transfers. I know Chris Graham is real big on closed transfers using you know, tubing and CO2 and all that and racking canes. And that will work nice. You know, again, if you don't have an environment that's relatively still and dust-free, you know, a closed transfer is probably a good idea. We'll transfer it in like that. And then as soon as I'm done transferring it, you know, that tubing gets rinsed out. And as long as you rinse it out immediately and all it's been transferring is beer, yeah, you're okay. And then it goes back into the sanitizer, and it sits in the sanitizer while I take care of everything else, which is closing up the keg, labeling the keg, flushing the keg, you know, harvesting the yeast, you know, getting the carboy filled with, you know, water and PBW, and then, you know, then the tubing comes out of the sanitizer and gets hung up to dry. So I'm fairly comfortable using that tubing, you know, for a season. I think it's okay. If I do any sour beers with it, then I tend to set that aside and use it only for sours on that plastic tubing. But even that, I still think you're okay. You know, that tubing's pretty smooth inside, so.
Okay. Another question about your process, Jay-Z. You talked about, you know, the better bottle works for you because you don't need to pull off Trub. You use your Whirlpool chiller.
Right.
So it goes pretty clean. And you mentioned earlier that you actually pre-chill your water, so you're able to get that wort really cold. How are you pre-chilling your water?
Oh, actually what I do is, you know, I'll start tap water first. And you know, you can knock down quite a bit of temperature just with tap water. And you know, once I've done that, I set up a bucket with just ice cubes in it and maybe like a half gallon of water. And then you can use any pump. People buy like sump pumps at Harbor Freight, real cheap. And they use that to pump the water through your chiller and back into the bucket. So you're just recirculating that water, that ice water, out of the bucket through the coil and back into your bucket. And if you need it to chill even more, you can add some salt or you can add a little more ice, and you can chill your wort down with the Whirlpool chiller. So it needs two pumps, one that's recirculating your wort around your chiller and one that pumps ice water through the coil. Now, if you're in a water-restricted area, like my friends in San Diego, you know, you can use a bucket with some ice and a little bit of water in it. And you can, you know, recirculate that through. You save that water. You can refreeze it. And then, you know, you use no water, essentially, for chilling your beer. It's very, you know, more environmentally friendly that way. And, you know, for water-restricted areas, that's huge.
Yeah.
They don't want to, you know, that's the whole reason people were buying counterflow chillers was, you know, they didn't want to use as much water.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you just recover that water and reuse it, and you're set.
Yeah. Okay. With the better bottles, a lot of question about oxygen permeability.
Uh-huh.
So they want to know, you know, are they permeable like plastic buckets? Specifically, somebody asked, have you noticed any difference in your beers when, say, you're aging or dry hopping your beers using these better bottles as a secondary or something like that? Have you noticed any?
Yeah, I still need more time on that, but haven't noticed really any problems so far. But I need to do more side-by-sides.
Okay. Now, something that came up about the V-vessel, but maybe even with all of these fermentation vessels, they were talking about is it more difficult to temp control something like a V-vessel? And I think they meant mobility, shape, size. I mean, every part of temp controlling with these vessels.
Unless you're mounting a bracket in your fridge.
Yeah.
And temp control is going to be a little trickier. You know, if you're in a cold environment... You know, you got a cold basement, and you could wrap one of those firm wraps from Moorbeer around the V vessel, and then you know, a controller.
Yeah.
You know, but otherwise, you need something you can put in a fridge. And I think, you know, having a fridge and you know, a temperature controller, you know, it's huge.
I've seen some sweet setups with the V vessel mounted inside a fridge. you know, or a stand-up freezer.
I don't see why you couldn't.
It's pretty nice, actually.
People have definitely done that. I know when we used to sell the V-Vessel, we had a stand for it, but I think the feet were too long sticking out, you know, to give it balance to even put in a fridge. So, yeah, if you're worried about temp control, if you want to brew in the summer and you want to get a new fermenter, if you can't put it in a fridge, V-Vessel is probably not the thing. But if you're just doing room temp in a bucket and you just kind of want to take that next step or whatever,
yeah,
then it's totally fine.
You're in the same boat with some of the stainless conicals, too. I mean, if you've got one of the larger ones, same thing. You need a fridge that'll fit it.
Yeah, you need a commercial fridge almost.
The small one with the small stand here, what is it, a 6.5-gallon conicle or something?
7.2.
That's pretty tiny.
One.
And that would fit, you know, in a lot of places.
Yeah, but, you know, what's nice about that is you can brew a 5-gallon batch of beer in that bad boy.
Right.
You got plenty of headspace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice.
It's pretty easy. Okay. Question about transferring to secondary when dry hopping. Mm-hmm. And he wants to know, do you always have to go to secondary when you're dry hopping, or could you do it in primary? Is there a rule?
You can do it in primary.
Okay.
Especially if your yeast is healthy to start with. The yeast are going to be stable and fine at fermentation temperatures. Don't let it all of a sudden get really hot, you know, and leave it out on the counter and it's 85 degrees, because then the yeast are going to, you know, die a lot faster. But if you're at fermentation temperature and your yeast was healthy to start with, you can go ahead and toss in those dry hops, and it's fine. The thing that I don't like about dry hopping along with the yeast and all that is I like to repitch my yeast, and I like to use hot pellets, and I get all that whole mass in there, and I worry about that. One of the a great thing about dry hopping and having plenty of yeast in the fermenter is that it'll suck up any oxygen that's entrained within the pellets themselves. So, John, did you have anything to add to that?
No, that's about right.
That's about right. No, that's right. Not about right. That's right.
It is right. When I dry hop, I do it in the keg, and so I had to shift gears and think, okay, for people that are bottling, you know, where are they going to add their dry hop? And I guess it would be to the primary. I'd save it, you know, towards the latter half of fermentation. And you'll get that vigorous first phase over with, and then dry hop. Mm-hmm. You still got yeast in the, you know, in the beers in suspension, able to take up the oxygen that come in with the pellets. Mm-hmm.
Even when you don't see yeast in the
Exactly.
There's plenty of yeast in there.
Yeah. So, but you're not going to end up coating the yeast or impairing the fermentation with alpha acids and losing lots of aroma like you would if you were to put mm-hmm. them in at the beginning of fermentation. So,
definitely wait till it all settles out and then go for it.
Yeah. So, right. No need to wait no need to transfer to a secondary to dry hop.
Mm hmm.
All right, and last question from the chat today. What kind of airlock or blow-off are you using on your Better Bottle Carboys, Jay-Z?
They sent me these plastic stoppers, and then there's a plastic one-way valve, dry one-way valve that goes in, or I can use regular airlocks in it. So that's what I'm using, either one. I'm old school, and those old airlocks filled with liquid, you know, kind of comforting to see, you know, with the dry airlocks, you hear them clicking, you know, and you can hear the action. But, when you're an old fart like me and your hearing's gone, and, you know, of course, vision's gone too, so I can't, either one's fine.
All right, and that's it from the chat, guys.
All right, so what we talked about today was kind of fermenter choices, what the different kinds of fermenters you can have out there. We named 11 dozen different types of fermenters that people commonly use. And the important thing to take away from them is, like JP's saying, the shape of the fermenter and is going to affect the flavor of your beer. And, you know, so it's not just a convenience factor, you know, what's breakable, what's not. That's a big factor, sure. Expense is a big factor, sure. But, realize that if you're switching to a different type of fermenter, that's going to affect your beer flavor to some extent. Maybe acceptable, maybe preferable, may not be, hard to say. But just keep in mind that the fermenter design impacts the beer flavor. And some of them will be easier, some of them not. Everybody has their own favorites. You may have a favorite for ales, you may have a favorite for lagers, you may have a favorite for sour beers. That's okay. That makes sense as well. Did I leave anything out, guys? Anything you want to add to that, John?
No, that sounds good.
Okay.
Sounds great.
So, you know, try your fermenters and you know, most importantly, keep brewing and keep fermenting away in all those different fermenters. If you need recipes to put into those fermenters, go to the Brewing Network store, and there you can find signed Brewing Classic Styles books. Last time I looked, there was 42 of them available. Jump on there and buy those up before they're gone. They go pretty quick. You're also going to find some anniversary shirts and anniversary glassware. The glassware is actually really cool. It's kind of like a short pour, 6 ounce, heavy duty, so you can actually drop those and not bust them, it seems. And they're pretty good. You can also pick up an AHA membership. I'm a big fan of the AHA, and I think buying a membership helps support homebrewing and homebrewers' rights. If you go to the homepage on the bottom right, homepage of the Brewing Network, on the bottom right there, you'll see the AHA membership. You just click on that. You don't even have to go to the store. You click on that, and that'll take you to the AHA site, and it's got a referring link, so you can buy your membership. A portion of that goes back to the Brewing Network and helps programming like this continue on. And if you are around on Sundays, listen to the Sunday session. Good show. And we'll be back the week after this with another Can You Brew It? Until then, be like my friends and brew strong.
Brew strong, everybody.